My name is John Cullen, and I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and curling. It's the story of Broomgate, how a single broom, yes, a broom, turned friends into foes and almost killed the 500-year-old sport of curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate, available now.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hey, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Q. Before we get going on today's show, I want to remind you, if you're not already following our show on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, do me a favor, hit the follow button, smash that follow button. Turns out it matters more than we thought, so it would help us out a lot. Okay, let's get going with today's show. Do you ever daydream about doing something else? Like you're happy with your job and all, but there's something you always wanted to do if only you had the time. You might relate to Emily Henry. She found herself doing technical copywriting for a cable company. She'll tell you what that is, and yes, it is as boring as it sounds. She'd wake up in the morning, though, before work and write teen fiction, but nothing really ever took off. And then something happened. I mean, she'll tell you what happened. She has this major realization. She starts writing romance novels, and well, now she's sold more than 2.5 million copies of her print books alone. That's not even counting the number of copies that she sold all around the world. Three of her books, including her breakout hit Beach Read, are being turned into movies. The way you see people write about her books is also interesting. They say things like she's cracked the modern romance novel code for Gen Z and millennials. And we talk a bit about that. I mean, if your knowledge of romance novels are like, you know, stuff at the grocery counter with Fabio on the cover called like Lust on the High Seas, Emily's books are for people who are tired of swiping left and right on apps and want there to be vulnerability and messiness with their love. You know, no disrespect to Fabio. Emily Henry has a new book out now. It's called Funny Story. She got on the line for a really great conversation. She's really funny. She's really engaging. She thinks deeply about why you might thumb your nose at a romance novel and why, in a cynical time, you should still believe in love. Here's our conversation. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. Congratulations on the book.
Thank you. It's been wild and surreal and wonderful so far.
Are you in the room where you write your books?
I am actually not at my real home.
Wow.
So this is the room. Yes, this is the room where I will be writing this next book, but I have not written a book in this room yet.
I love how you say my real home. It's your duplicate
home. It's my fake home. Yeah, my real home is being renovated currently.
Okay, okay,
so
okay.
Yes, it's my duplicate copy paste.
Can you give me an idea of where you write? Can you paint me a picture of where you write these books?
Well, actually, I mostly am a couch writer. I am usually lying fully down with my head like up at a 90 degree angle. Tom can see this. The rest of you will have to imagine it.
Yeah.
It's very bad for you. And I have chronic migraine mysteriously, but that's the way that I like to write. I have an office, I have a desk, but I want to be lounging. And then I did finally get like a walking treadmill. So I kind of alternate between walking and writing and then just bed rotting.
Yeah. I'm more of the bed rotting type myself. Hold on.
Yeah.
I figured, fancy pants author, you'd be sitting at a desk, you know, with a candle and a quill. Like, I'm surprised you're lying down like I do when I'm scrolling YouTube in the night.
I mean, you know, you mentioned Danielle Steele, and I don't know if you've ever seen pictures of Danielle Steele's pied-à-terre, but it's gorgeous. And I aspire to that. But realistically, I am a millennial to my core. And I need to be like within reach of the remote to watch Vanderpump Rules. So my life is not really that glamorous just yet.
Yet.
I'm not Danielle.
Yet. Yeah. The turret's coming for you. Before we get into your latest book, I want to go through the story just a little bit because I find it really interesting. So you moved back to Cincinnati after college. Your first job was technical copywriting for a cable company.
That's so real.
What does that look like? What kind of stuff were you writing about?
Oh, what was I writing about? It was like a lot of FAQs of like how to turn your TV on. And I don't know. This is so, it's like so boring that I feel like my brain has erased much of what I was doing. But it was like building set top boxes, which I can't tell you what they are, but it's basically a, it's so boring. It's so boring. There's nothing to be said.
That's the, no, that's, you don't know that that's the focus of the interview. We're just going to talk about
Yeah, it's going to be good. The people they worked with will be thrilled about that. Yeah. I mean, it was just 8 hours in a room full of TVs that were muted, but you know, overstimulating me and yeah, writing like chatbot help mostly for people to figure out how to make their internet work.
Real phased out by AI kind of writing. Real.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yes. Really, and you know what? I say let them have that one. There are a lot of things where I'm like, really? Why would we give this most coveted job on the planet to a robot? But for that,
sure.
Let it go.
Are you like, was it, were you doing that job because it was kind of writing by any means necessary? I just want to make a living from writing. Something.
Yeah. I mean, I was doing that job because I needed a full-time job. I needed to be paid something that, you know, I needed the payment that goes along with using your degree. I do not recommend getting a writing job if you are a writer. That was absolutely brutal to try and write fiction like in the mornings before going to this job that I hated and writing all day, things that I didn't care about. But also, I think that that sheer desperation is probably what led me to start publishing so young, just like feeling like I have to leave this job by any means. So, yeah, worked out.
Tell me more about that writing you were doing at like, what, 5 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah. So I started out, you know, I was writing young adult novels. I was writing about teenagers and I was like 25 at the time. So it kind of felt like that was the only stage of life I had any like opinions on, like everything, like I hadn't lived much. And I loved coming of age stories. I always had growing up and writing them. I loved writing them so much. And, you know, we were talking about how I kind of tripped and fell into romance writing. And it was because I had been writing these coming of age stories about people who were like 17 and 18. And then I got a little bit older and I was approaching 30 and I started feeling this like deep cosmic, like second coming of age. And weirdly, I felt like no one in my life had told me that that would happen. You hear about like midlife crises, but you don't really hear about graduating from college and realizing you're like, you have no clue what comes next and being like set on a track that you're not sure about. So at that point, I just wanted to write another coming of age for like a different age group, basically. And that became my first novel, Beach Read.
Can you connect the dots there a little bit for me though? Yeah. Like, cause I feel like when I hear the, and I'm 37 in a couple of days. I'm 36.
It's impossible to know.
Yeah, I know. I know. I could, and also look at me. I could be 88 or 16. But I think we're around, maybe around the same age. I think you're a little bit younger than me. When you approach that, when I've heard people say to me, you know, I approached 30 and, you know, I was trying to figure out what my life was going to be and I was getting older, but I wasn't quite old yet, but I was, you know, oftentimes like a guided mushroom is sort of in the cards or, you know, traveling to go see fish somewhere. Can you connect the dots between that and romance writing? Like how the awakening was romance writing?
Yeah, completely. I mean, so I guess it wasn't as intentional as I maybe just made it sound. It was like, I was having this coming of age that felt like my whole life was just thrown into disarray. It felt like chaos. And I felt like my perception of the world was radically changing really fast. I had always been so optimistic for one thing. And I think had very rose colored glasses. And as I was getting older, it just felt like the world was really disappointing me. Yeah. Like I felt, just disappointed and like a lot more pessimistic and capitalism came to play much more deeply in my life since I was like on my own and paying my bills and all of that. And I just felt so overwhelmed and, disappointed. And because of that, I wanted to be writing something that felt really safe and warm and inviting. And so I started this book and I just like made a document and called it Beach Read. Had no premise other than like something warm and inviting. And I was thinking about like my comfort films, like Nora Ephron movies, basically, and wanting to tell that kind of story because I felt like that would be a really good use of my time in between books that I had under contract to just write something just for me that was joyful and safe and comforting. And then I got in there and I started writing about like grief on accident. And I started writing about feeling disappointed by the world and let down by by the people who had been like your rock, you know, growing up, just feeling like the rug is being pulled out from under you. And it was also still in the context of this like happy love story set on the shore of Lake Michigan, but it became so much about sort of the feelings that I was wrestling with. I was just setting them on this character and making her deal with them. And something that really struck me as I was writing that was that it felt like very much aligned with how writing for teens felt. It felt like exactly this coming of age, just a different stage of life. And it also struck me that a love story is a really good way to force characters through intense transformation, because I think that is kind of how it works in real life too. Like when you are falling in love, you know, it's fun. It's like, you think about it as like this fun, giddy, joyful experience, but it's also like terrifying and sometimes traumatizing and even triggering. I think you find out so much about yourself when you are in like a new relationship. You reevaluate like your attachment styles, yeah. Like everything, every issue that you've ever had bubbles to the surface when you are falling in love. And so it just worked out to be like, oh, this is kind of a formula. Like, I mean, not in the way that people talk about romance as being formulaic, which I think is sort of ridiculous, but I think a formula as far as I can tell, use love stories specifically to show people transforming, just to show people growing, to push a character through an emotional arc.
Oh, that's so interesting. That's so interesting. And here's my question. You just said like, hey, there's a formula. There's not, you know, there was a formula, not the way that people think is there is a formula. You are sort of discovering yourself. I love that you sort of let your guard down writing romance. All of a sudden you let your guard down a little bit and stuff like grief started coming out and stuff that maybe wasn't, you know, stuff that you didn't.
Totally.
That's such a beautiful thing to have to happen, you know, that happens.
Yeah. And I think it only could happen because I was writing this book just for me, which is, I know, a ridiculous luxury that I had the time and space to do that. But because I was writing it for me, I wasn't thinking, where does this fit into like the romance as a genre? Will anyone want to buy this? Will a publisher be interested? Like, it just felt very authentic to what my experience of real life love is, which I think is so often like you meet someone and once you hit that moment of free fall where you're just like ready to mainline them, so much of the conversation that you're having is just excavating your personal histories and you're like just going through all of your past relationships and you're talking about your parents and like, you just almost have this like transfusion process that happens. So when I was trying to write about two people falling in love, it wasn't just like, oh, they're going on romantic dates. It was like, they're really talking about all the worst things that have ever happened in their lives. And yeah, it didn't necessarily fit neatly into the genre as far as I understood it, but that wasn't what I was trying to do. I was just trying to write a book.
I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. You're listening to my conversation with the author Emily Henry, one of the best-selling modern romance novelists in the world, someone who is seen as cracking the code on the romance novel for millennials and TikTokers, I think partly because she references Taylor Swift in her books, to be honest. So here's the thing. In addition to being a best-selling author, she's also a strong, strong defender of romance novels. You might not know this, but romance authors have often been disparaged over the years. They can be treated as unserious, as a bit of a joke. Not only does Emily stick up for romance books as a public figure, she also talks about it in her books. Take a listen. Yeah, and I think you have stuff to say about the genre. Like in that book, there's a, for people who don't know, we're talking about Beach Read right now. We'll talk about Funny Story later, but like Beach Read, which was Emily's first book and sort of the breakthrough book and became a kajillion seller. There are parts, I mean, so the one of the characters is a millennial romance writer, and there are parts of the book where she reflects on the value of romance novels as people dismiss them. What's going on there?
What's going on there? I wish I could tell you. I hadn't really read romance. I loved romantic comedy films, and I wrote this book, but I had written for young adults, and I'd gotten a lot of the same sort of dismissiveness that romance writers get, which is just like I remember going to a birthday dinner and a friend of a friend was asking me how things were going. And I told him I'd sold my first book for teenagers. And he literally said to me, whatever pays the bills. Like he was like giving me an excuse. He was like, basically like, we both know you're better than this. And this is like a compliment for me to say that you're lowering yourself and this isn't something you believe in. And that wasn't the case at all for me. I mean, I was writing for teens because I think some of those books that I was reading growing up were like the most important books I've ever read. Like, they shaped so much of who I am and they were so significant to me. And there's also, I'm trying to remember who said, like, you have to write, it might've been, I could be misquoting this, but it might've been Madeline L'Engle who said that like writing for adults is like, things have to be so simple and make sense to them. And writing for kids, like, kids are so much more willing to, I don't know, like, accept mess and complication and nuance because they don't have their worldviews like so codified or something. But yeah, it was really shocking to me how often I would encounter people who just assumed that what I was working on, this stuff that mattered so much to me, was just some sort of cash grab, which is also funny because there is so little money in publishing. But I think people are just like, well, you're trying to write Twilight or The Hunger Games or whatever. So I knew that. And I knew, I had seen the conversation surrounding romance my whole life. Like, even though I hadn't been a romance reader, I knew that the way that romance novels got talked about and the way that the women, especially who read them, got talked about. And it was very dismissive and ridiculous, I think, honestly. And once I wrote this book, I, after that, started reading a lot of romance and realized that it was like probably my favorite genre of all time. Just like, so much of it is so good because it's really, really character driven. And that's my favorite thing. Like, I love a punchy plot and a good twist, but I really want characters who I'm going deep into their psyches and following them very closely. And yeah, there's just so much good stuff in the genre.
And you, it's very, I've heard you say, I can't remember where I read it, but you said something like, it's really important to me that I call myself a romance author.
Yeah, definitely. Because the other thing is with Beach Read, because I wasn't writing like into the existing genre, there was a little bit of a conversation of, is this truly a romance novel or is it quote unquote women's fiction, which I can explain to you even less than the snobbery around romance. But there was that conversation, which I think is a valid conversation. Like, but I always wanted to claim myself as a romance writer because I wanted it to be clear to readers that if they like what I'm doing, they're going to love a lot of romance novels. Like, it's not, it might be a little bit over a line into a different genre, but it's not far into that. Like, it's very much a love story.
But why is that important? It feels like you're sticking up for romance novels a little bit when you say that.
Yeah. I mean, it is that is exactly why it's important to me, because there is still a lot of snobbery around the genre. And I don't know, I find it really bizarre because it's one of the very few genres that is so centered on women primarily. Like, obviously, you know, it's not just for or no, by I, or about
I,
women,
I understand.
But yeah, but it's very centered on women, and the authorship, I feel like, is dominated by women. The readership is dominated by women. And I just don't think it's really a coincidence that it's the genre that gets dismissed so readily. And, you know, I also think about like women's art, like, historically, like, men were painting wars or whatever, and women were painting like domestic scenes because that was where women were living their lives. And for a long time, those types of paintings were not taken seriously because it was like, well, this is an important painting. This is domestic, whatever. And I don't know. I mean, romance is so significant because it values women's stories. And obviously there are writers doing that in every single genre, but to have such a big, like, financially sound genre that's really just about women's stories and like love, even, like, I think women are socialized to prioritize love as so important, but then it's like still like treated like a silly thing if that's like something you care about, if the stories you're reading are like centered around love.
The way you talk about love is really striking to me. I think you get a lot of attention for the healthy way you write about love, like the way the relationships in general are healthy, if a bit misguided or a bit, you know, not amazing, but like pretty healthy overall. Love is also a very vulnerable thing to offer to one another. I just finished reading Sharon Salzberg's book, Real Love. I don't know if you've ever read it, but it's beautiful. It's sort of all about like what love really is and how much you have to let your guard down in order to love somebody. And you know, more than Fabio, that's really what I see in your books. But that's not always fed to us, especially through TikTok now. I think if you're on TikTok right now, the idea of dating and loving is dating seems so far from love right now.
Oh, totally. Yeah. That's like devastating for so many people in my life who are like out there trying to date. Yeah. It's so bizarre because I think most people, or at least a large portion of people, would say that love is like the most important part of life. Like, if you have all of your actual physical needs met, then the next thing that matters to you is loving and being loved. I think that's so deeply human and so important to almost all of us. So it's kind of, yeah, it's bizarre that I think that's true, but our actions don't always align with that. And the way that we view art doesn't always align with that. And I don't know. I mean, maybe that is just because love is also ultimately terrifying. Like, you want to get to that steady, stable place, but to, like you're saying, let your guard down and be seen is the scariest thing. And I think most of the time we choose not to do that. It's like you have to, you're so careful about who you let in, which is not a bad thing.
Tell me if this is too personal, and I won't ask it, but like, where do your beliefs about love come from? Like, did you have a good model for love growing up with your folks or anything like that?
Yeah. I have a sort of, I don't know, like almost absurdly good model. My parents are I don't know if they want me to say this, but they've been married for a very long time. They got married when they were 17 and 19.
Wow.
And they have, yeah, they've been together my whole life. And to me, love was just, it was such a secure thing. It was such a thing that you could rely on. And even like growing up, hearing my parents argue, like there was kind of a joke about how every time we go on a family trip, which also is a sidebar, they would make us leave at 3 a.m. and we would drive places so that we wouldn't have to pay for that extra hotel night.
Okay.
Yeah. So we would, me and my brothers would be piled in the back of the van. We'd be pulling out of the neighborhood and they would just be like bickering with each other. And it was just like the first 10 minutes of every trip were so annoying, like not scary, like not like, it wasn't like, oh, mom and dad are fighting, they're going to get a divorce. It was like, this is so annoying. Yeah. Just stop. We're all so tired. And then like we'd get out of the city and everything would be okay. And like every single time, whoever had kind of picked the fight would be like, I'm sorry. And then they'd like hold hands in the front seat. And it was just, they were so quick to apologize. And, you know, like they would be grumpy, they'd be, I don't know, they'd bicker, but like the apology was always so forthcoming and so earnest. And I think because of that, I was just sort of like, yeah, love is stable and steady and reliable. And it's not always perfect, but it holds you. And I was so lucky.
Neil Young and Harvest Moon, a song referenced in the new Emily Henry book, Funny Story. Emily is an internationally best-selling author of romance novels, one of the most popular of a new generation of romance readers. You're going to hear more of our conversation coming up.
Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements?
I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
There's one that I have some confusion about.
What is it?
And so I think you should tell me what it is, and it's Secret Baby.
It's where you're secretly a baby. No, I bet it's where you secretly have a baby.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep, that's, yeah.
I mean, I was pretty close first time around. That is one of the most popular romance novelists in the world, explaining to you, well, to me, romance novel cliches. I'm Tom Power. You're listening to Q. You're in the middle of my conversation with Emily Henry, one of the most successful romance novelists of all time. Best-selling author. She's drawn millennials and Gen Z back to romance, refreshing the genre with stories that resonate deeply with a generation that's more dating apps than, you know, Love in a Meadow. By the way, if you want to see that game we played where Emily Henry explains popular romance novel plots to you, we got that up on our TikTok. That's at CBCQ on TikTok. In the meantime, you've been hearing my conversation with Emily about how she went from a frustrated writer who wrote cable box manuals for a living to a literary phenomenon selling over 2 million print copies of her romance novels. Three of them have been optioned for movies. Her latest book is called Funny Story. What is it that makes Emily Henry so beloved by the new generation of romance readers? It's partly because she's unafraid to show the unsexy sides of love. Here's more of our conversation. I think the way you write about it in your book and the way that you get a lot of attention for writing about it in your book is that it's also very real, and love can be very awkward and a lot can be very uncomfortable. And you've gotten like a lot of attention for writing about dating apps, writing about condoms, writing about vasectomies. Why do you want to include those more realistic, I kind of want to say the word unsexy parts of love in your books?
Yeah. I don't know, because I think that the thing that draws me to love isn't the sexiness of it. It's like the magic of it. It's such a weird thing that it's like hard to even describe what love is. And it's like that thing that you know it when you feel it. And often it's more of a verb than anything else. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, I love the Bridgerton show. I love a sexy historical romance. That is also very fun. But I think that the thing that's most interesting to me about love is sort of the messy, like, humanness of it. It's the fact that it's like, I don't know, that it, again, like, it's what I think is the most important thing in the world. It's like what makes the world go round. And you know, whenever I get like overwhelmed by life stuff or publishing stuff or whatever, I always do just think about what really matters to me and what I'll care about at the end of life. And it really is that I know the thing that matters most to me is that I will have loved people very well and been there for them and supported them, and that I will have been loved deeply by other people too. Like, I feel like I don't know why it matters. It just does matter.
Do you have these moments? Like, I was thinking about with, you know, I promise I'm going somewhere with this. I think about someone like Taylor Swift, right? Mm-hmm. Who, you know, writes an album, and for whatever reason, and I'm not interested really in going into why, people go through the lyrics and they go, oh, that's probably about this guy and that's about that dude and that's it, you know? And I talked to this soap opera actor, Tanya Williams, the other day, who was a doctor on The Young and the Restless, and she played a doctor on The Young and the Restless. And she said, you know, Tom, people are coming up to me at the grocery store all the time going like, hey, so I got this pain in my shoulder. You know what I mean? And like talking to her about her, you know, as if she was a real doctor. You write these romantic, very hopeful books, as far as I can tell, and I'm not actually – I wouldn't fault you if you wanted to guard your personal life very closely. I think you're in a stable, happy relationship and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like – yeah, I'm like pretty private, but yes, I am. And I feel like that is partly – you know, talking about my parents, that's a huge part, I think, of why I'm able to write these books. And I think my relationship is also a part of that.
Do you find that people go to you for answers for their own lives?
I don't know if they go to me for answers, but I do find, like, I get messages from readers who are really connecting with the characters and who are finding hope in them when they have really similar situations. I mean, I don't know. It's interesting because I've always known I wanted to write fiction. I've never really been interested in anything else. And I was talking to a couple of friends this week about, like, how fiction has been so powerful for me and how I feel like I'm so much better at learning from story than I am from learning from facts. Like, that is really how I've always been. And so I think that the books just kind of speak for themselves, I hope, anyway. So I think the readers get the stuff that they would be asking me about from the books themselves. And I think because they're readers, that probably hits a little bit harder than if I was just like trying to give advice.
There's a line in Beach Read I wanted to close off on. A character's talking about the value of romance novels, and they say, the world doesn't always look how it does in your books, but by putting them out there, that changes the world a little bit. Is that how you see your own work?
Yeah, I mean, that's how I see all art. I think I'm like mostly like a pretty pragmatic, practical person, but I think that my relationship to art is like the, I don't know, like the most woo-woo thing about me, I guess
Go
I
on,
would say.
look at this beard and this plaid shirt. You think you can't go, you think you can go too woo-woo for me? Please, come on.
I really truly believe that art is like alchemy. Like I really think that if you make something, it changes the physical world, whether you ever see or understand how that is. Like, I mean, there's, you know, the thing of having a viewer or a reader that you're sharing something with that it might change them, but I think it's even deeper than that. I think just by making the thing that's really pressing to you, that feels urgent, I don't know. I think there's something happening. There's something happening that you can't really explain. And I think it's always valuable and it's always worth it. Like, even if you don't get to share it in the big way that you're hoping to.
But for you, what is that thing? For you in your novels, what's that thing?
What's the thing?
Yeah, like when you're saying that,
Like,
like for you, say like
what's.
for all art, we are all trying to
Yeah.
offer something into the world to make, you know? But like if you
Oh.
could parse it to
Well,
your own books.
yeah. Well, I don't think it's that I'm even sure. I don't think you have to try to make it something. Like, I mean, I do think that there's messaging in my books because everyone has a viewpoint. And I think, like, my point, the thing that I'm always writing toward, even before I was writing in romance, is the idea that despite the fact that love, that life is really, really hard and painful a lot of the time, that loving makes it worth it. Like that is, I think, what every book I'm doing is really about, is just trying to like affirm for myself and for my readers that like the pain is worth the joy that comes with being on this planet. But I think what I'm talking about when making something change, like how that might change something, I don't even know that I could say what it's
Yeah.
changing. I just think about like TV shows and that I really, really loved and felt like were so special and significant being canceled and thinking like, well, that doesn't mean that it wasn't worth being made just because it couldn't make enough money for someone to like stamp it to keep being on the air. Like that was something special that was doing something and it mattered. Or like when you see actors who don't really break out until they're like in their 60s and they've been working tirelessly at this for 40 years while everyone in their lives is like telling them you need to move on. And it'd be so easy to believe that voice of you're not supposed to be doing this. But I think like doing your work, whatever that is, like literally if it's like farming, which is very important and valuable, or like plumbing or making a song or a film or a book. I think doing your work is like cosmically important, and I can't really explain why.
Yeah.
It's just like a feeling that I have.
I hear what you're saying. It's so beautiful to talk to you. You're such a great joy to talk to.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
That's my conversation with Emily Henry, internationally best-selling author of romance novels. Three of them, including her breakout Beach Read, have been optioned for movies. Her latest novel, Funny Story, is out everywhere now. And I'll say it again if you want to see. I had a really good time doing this, seeing my chat with Emily Henry on TikTok. Like, we played this game. The game was originally supposed to be that she explains romance novel tropes to me, but it actually turned into me trying to guess what they were and getting them so wrong, so incredibly wrong. But how am I supposed to know? I'm not on Book Talk. Anyway, you can find that on our TikTok at CBCQ. The other conversation we have up today is with Christian Sparks, who is the director from Newfoundland and Labrador, who made this new movie called The King Tide. I know I'm a homer. I know I'm I know I'm a cheerleader for all things from the province where I'm from, which, as we all know, is New Brunswick. And Christian is I will say Christian is a brilliant filmmaker. And what I really love about his films is that there's a certain rosy, folksy cheeriness that is associated with Newfoundland and Labrador, and he sees the darker, more isolated part. And I love his films, and I think The King Tide is so brilliant. So we asked him to come on the show, and he said yes, and we'd never actually met before. So you can find that on our podcast, Q with Tom Power. We'll see you soon, later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.